Good evening and welcome.
What are we gonna do with our children? What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Back to Mask's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Mask, Mothers and Fathers Aligned, saving kids of all ages and all stages from mental health issues, addiction, school issues. If you know someone that needs a referral or support group, please give us a call at 718-758-0400. We do programs in schools, in camps. We have staff training. If you would like to bring a program to your school for prevention or awareness of all mental health issues, feel free to give us a call. Maybe you want to write our number down. I'll repeat it. Maybe it's for yourself, for a neighbor, a friend, a loved one, maybe someone you sit next to in shul. Our number again, anonymous call. You can call and just describe a situation. It's 718-758-0400. And if you know anyone that wants a free training and a free naloxone kit, which is another form of Narcan, it's an inhaler for prevention of opioid overdose, please give us a call. There are no side effects. Call us. We'll explain to you what it is. We'll describe how, you know, to use one, and we can come to your home and train you on how to get, how to use, actually, the naloxone kit. So feel free to give us a call. So tonight, I'm very, very honored to have with us a dear colleague, someone that is so busy, so I'm so happy that he's made the time to come on and share such important information, and that is Dr. Rose Marine. Good evening. How are you?
Hi, good evening. It's my honor to be here. Mask is doing tremendous work, and we've known each other for a long time, and I'm glad we could finally have a chat.
Absolutely. And Dr. David Rose Marine is an assistant professor in the Department of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and the director of McLean Hospital Spirituality and Mental Health Program. He is also the founder and the director the Center for Anxiety, which has offices in Manhattan, in Brooklyn, and in Muncie. And Mask refers to those offices all the time. So we really have a lot of respect, Dr. Rose Marine, for you and your staff that is so professional at your offices. So let's get right to it. I know you wrote a handbook of Torah and mental health with Rabbi Saul Chaimov. We'll get to that at another show. But meanwhile, sure, Let's talk about your focus that you speak about so often around the world, and that is anxiety. Dr. Rose Marine, can you share with my listeners, what is anxiety, please?
Yeah, sure. And thanks, by the way, for those kind comments about my program. I am definitely very proud of our work at the Center for Anxiety. What is anxiety? Well, you probably know what a fear response is. Fear is when people have a sudden fight-flight response. It's a physiological process. The adrenal glands, which sit on top of your kidneys, will fire off adrenaline into the bloodstream, and people will have a cascade of physiological responses, including increased heart rate and pupil dilation, increased muscle tone, increased rate of breathing in order to power your muscles, digestion slows, and all of that is very, very healthy. Fear I'm talking about, because if you mentioned naloxone before, and it's really scary what's happening in the opiate world, but you know, God forbid if you were to see somebody going through you know, what looks like an overdose, it's terrifying, and you go into full gear. Adrenal glands would fire off, and you'd know if you had naloxone, you'd know what to do. Then you would power through it and be able to overcome, probably, hopefully, fight as opposed to flee. In other situations, though, you might flee. Let's say, I don't know, an MTA bus were careening towards you at 70 miles an hour. Then all of a sudden, hopefully, you'd have the muscular strength and the physiological response to be able to get out of the way. So that's all of that is fear. Fear is a superhuman strength that people have. It's a good thing. It's very positive. Hopefully you don't need it too much. But it's the kind of thing that's positive. Anxiety is the exact same as fear, but there's one critical difference. Can you take a guess?
You tell me.
Okay, I stumped you, but that's fine. The difference is when a person doesn't need to have that response. If a person's having a fear response in the absence of a real fear stimulus, in other words, it's a false positive where we don't really need it, but we're having it, we call that anxiety. So fear is a positive, adaptive, healthy response to a real threat. Anxiety is that same exact response to fake news, so to speak. To something that's not really, necessary to have such an extreme or such a severe response, given the real danger in the situation.
So there are many different kinds of anxiety. You know, going back to school the first day could bring on anxiety. To, you know, making new friends, social anxiety.
Great.
You know, there are different anxieties we're talking about. And, I mean, anti-Semitism, going to shul after there's a whole attack in one of the synagogues in a place of prayer. So then the next weekend when you have to go back to your synagogue, you know, that could cause anxiety. I mean, how big is the problem? I know the answer because I know the stats that they're putting out. But just for our listeners, how big of a problem is anxiety today?
Yeah,
from your end?
Just to be clear for listeners, all those different types of anxiety, social anxiety or worry about the future, like what if a person's safe. Also, you didn't mention it, but panic attacks or specific
phobias. Right,
phobia,
that was going to be my next.
Yeah, even obsessive compulsive disorder and those, you know, which is not an anxiety disorder technically, but a lot of it is mediated by fear. All of it is the same. It's a disproportionate fear response that's not warranted. If, God forbid, there's an intruder at a synagogue, then that's a fear response. But if there isn't one, and a person's sitting on edge and they can't focus, that we call that anxiety. Because there isn't really present, a current present danger. Same thing with phobias, when people are afraid of dogs. I mean, you know, dogs can nip at you, but, you know, usually getting mauled by a chihuahua, when's the last time you read about that? Panic attacks, too. People feel like they're going to die, but they don't. They panic attacks will not kill a person. Maybe their response to it will. But just to make it clear, all of those are anxiety. And how big of a response, how common is it? Well, the national data suggests that one-fifth of American adults in every given year have an anxiety disorder. One-fifth. That's a lot. That's why we're so busy. and over the lifetime, it's actually two-fifths. Two in five will at some point in time have an anxiety disorder. Among teens, it's about one in three, which is even higher than adults, interestingly. And we're also seeing increased severity. A lot of people have anxiety disorders, like I mentioned, but about a quarter of the people who have anxiety disorders in any given year have them so bad that they either are incapacitated by them, they can't work, they can't go to school, or potentially even worse, they're suicidal and whatnot. So that means about 1 in 20 American adults in every given year has a severe anxiety disorder, which is you know, about 5 or 6% of the population. That's pretty, those are pretty high numbers, at least by my count.
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely. Times are hard. I mean, you know, we all feel anxious. Everyone feels anxious from time to time. And it could
it's funny you say times
reason.
Are hard. It's funny you say times are hard and it's for a good reason. I actually see the exact opposite because
really?
I see there's less, there's less of a reason to be afraid than ever in history. I mean, we're more educated, we're more wealthy. When's the last time you had somebody, a guest on your radio show who didn't have indoor plumbing in his house? How many people who are listening to this show have never been to a doctor ever in their lives? Probably no one. We have less reason to be anxious than ever. And I think that's actually the reason why we're so anxious. It's because we expect everything to be perfect, including ourselves. And the reality is that we're human beings. And when we have anxiety, when we fight it, it actually gets a lot worse. That's what all the data suggests. But if we accept that, okay, I'm not perfect. I had a false positive. I had a fight. I had an anxiety spurt. Like, now what do I do? That's the adaptive, healthy response to anxiety, and we don't take that. We bury it, we hide it, we don't show it to anybody else, we don't speak about it, we don't get the help that we need, and all of that just makes a bad situation a heck of a lot worse.
So, I mean, why are so many people struggling with anxiety? Is it biological? Do you want to discuss the biological reasons one may struggle?
It's a great question. Why are so many people struggling with anxiety today? I think it's pretty much what I said before, that we don't, instead of confronting our fears, when you feel anxious, Rahama, let me ask you, are you more likely to confront those fears, or by nature, do you pull back from them and start to avoid them and choose a more comfortable route?
I gotta be honest, until maybe... I'll make it up. Until maybe last year, I may have avoided them. But I think I'm working on myself. I'm working on facing the fears more.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah, I have been.
And since you started doing that, has your anxiety gotten better or worse?
I don't have anxiety.
Well, if you had anxiety.
But if I had anxiety, I could see where... it could only get better then, right? And decrease.
100%. That's
right?
That's what everybody. Usually, I shouldn't say everybody, but that is the general approach to anxiety. However, our culture doesn't support that. Most people, the minute they feel anxious, they go to their doctor and they'll get a prescription for clonazepam or Valium or Xanax, and they try to put out the fire. But the results of that tend to be, not always, but it tends to be that anxiety gets worse when we avoid it, when we try to put it out, and it gets better when we take the Rahama approach, when we face our fears, when we stand up to them, when we don't let them control our lives, and when we don't take the easy path.
So what can you share with my listeners to help them with anxiety?
Absolutely. If you're going to get one piece of information from this whole interview, it's this. If you're afraid of something, face your fears. Face your fears if you're afraid of something. Now, of course, I'm not talking about, you know, a real threat. Like if you're, you know, have a concern that swimming with great white sharks is going to hurt you, well, don't do that because, hey, it might. But I'm talking about things that really are safe, but they make you afraid. If you're afraid to talk to your boss or to ask for help, if you're afraid to go over to someone to ask them for the time, if you're worried about something, we encourage people to worry more, not to worry less. We actually will encourage them to do it. People with OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, whatever they fear, whatever they're concerned of, in my office, we encourage them to go out and to face it systematically, over and over and over again until their anxiety ebbs. And that is the tried and tested approach of what we call exposure therapy. And what's interesting, Rahama, is that the anxiety doesn't go away right away. people, when they face their fears, their anxiety gets worse, not better. It's after they learn to accept that, truly accept it, that they can't control it, that there's nothing wrong with them, there's nothing wrong with feeling anxious, it's just an uncomfortable feeling, and it eventually goes away. Once people get to a place of acceptance about that, that's when, so to speak, the magic happens, and they can settle down and move on with their lives and focus on other things.
You know, Dr. Rosemarine, people that have anxiety, they have changes in their sleep, in their appetite, they socially could withdraw, they, you know, have cognitive trouble. There are many different results, symptoms, as a result of anxiety. Some could come with other diagnosis, whether it's depression, whether it's, you're the doctor, you tell us. What would you say other reasons are that could be that it's not just general life anxiety, that we're scared of a dog or we're scared of going back to the synagogue, but more that it could be with other issues that they may be diagnosed with as a result?
Well, anxiety, people can have anxiety with other conditions. That's true. And in the case of certain types of anxiety, you mentioned social anxiety and generalized anxiety, it's actually more often than not that people will have depression or that people will have, depression. And with social anxiety, often substance use, people will turn to drugs or alcohol in order to cope with how it makes them, how nervous they feel in social situations. And all of that is really, in many ways, a lot of that is outgrowth of people not facing their fears. Now, when a person comes in and they're addicted to a substance or to alcohol and they also have social anxiety, you're right, it's a lot more complicated. And the exposure therapy that we would do would have to be done in conjunction with getting them to limit and eliminate their substance or alcohol use. And when someone's depressed, well, we would want them to stay moving and to get moving, make sure their sleep is regulated, making sure that they're exercising regularly, that they're being social, that they have a job, they're holding down a job, in conjunction with doing exposure therapy. But that doesn't mean that the answer to anxiety isn't exposure. It is. That is the solution. The only question is how to deploy it and how to deliver that with each individual person, depending on their specific profile.
Got it. So is treatment the same for children as for adults?
Right. Yeah. A lot of people ask about their kids these days because, as I mentioned before, children are more likely to have anxiety than adults for a variety of reasons. It is the exact same. We would encourage children to face their fears, to recognize that avoiding or engaging in compulsions is not the approach. The difference is that children have to be taught at their level, and often parents aren't the best people to deliver that message because they're also doing, well, you know, parenting, they're dealing with school, they're dealing with homework, they're dealing with friends, they're dealing with drop-off, they're also stressed out because they're parents and they have a lot on their heads. So often, even more so than adults, it makes sense to involve a therapist who can help children to understand the importance of facing their fears and to help them actually do so. What we don't want to do with anxious children is to put them in play therapy or into other modes of therapy that are essentially not effective and in many cases just a waste of time and resources. Because what happens when we do that is that the children see, oh, therapy doesn't really have anything to offer me, and then they don't get better, and then children stop asking questions. So what I would definitely recommend for parents of anxious children is to find somebody who is trained in delivering behavior therapy or exposure therapy specifically for kids. Who want someone who knows how to do that and who they can consult with in order to either do aspects of the treatment themselves or to have them as a therapist work with their child.
Dr. Rosemarine, we at MASC, we're starting our 23rd year now this month before Purim, and all the years when parents, and we've hit already over 100,000 families that have reached out to me, and all the years we say when a parent calls, my child's anxious and the kid is very young, we always recommend that the parent go to speak to a professional, not bring the child to a therapist, to explore first what's going on. Maybe there's some parenting skills different to offer, and maybe the mom's or the father is an anxious person and it's being trickled down. But, I mean, it's so important not to rush to take a child, like you said, suddenly to therapy. It could be doing more damage than help. So,
well, I mentioned having a consultation. So
a consultation, yes.
Obviously,
and then the therapist will decide what kind of therapy the child should be going to that makes the most sense. And we trust the Center for Anxiety because that is the specialty that you guys focus on. So parents could make an appointment and come for a consultation, right?
That's what we're here for.
That's what they're there for. So, but what about when there is a parent that has anxiety? Kids get affected by that.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. I can confidently say we get about 800 new patients per year in our program, and about 20 to 25% of them are children. And I can confidently say that I've never seen an anxious child who did not have at least one anxious parent. Never. Now, and you're right, kids learn a lot from their parents. I'll also tell you something which is optimistic. I've seen parents who work on their anxiety and they overcome it with exposure therapy or other methods for that matter. And even without the child knowing about it, the children actually can get better. It's an amazing thing.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of families over the years where the parents, we suggested the parents go into treatment and work on themselves first with their anxiety, and the families then the system change for the better. And, you know, at MASC we use the saying, if you change the music in your home, your kids' dance steps could change. So that's what it is, I guess. When we change, our children can get
then our children change
better
and
healthier.
Thing.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
So how does one know?
I know you wanted to ask me about I know you wanted to ask me about religion at some point. I don't know.
Yeah. So I just want to know before we go to that, in the FRM community with mental health, how has it been in reference to impacting shidduchim?
Yeah, it's a great question.
Therapy from your end of, at the Center for Anxiety.
It's a great question. When I opened up my Flatbush office, I put in a waiting room, and people said, "You're insane. No one's going to come." And honestly, now we have a 4-week waiting list just to get an initial appointment. So it's the stigma, I think, has decreased so much, in part, honestly, thanks to you and your work and the community and others like you, that people are recognizing that if they have a concern, it's not the end of the world, it doesn't mean it's the end of your life, it's not the end of your shidduchim, it's not the end of your family, it's something that people have to deal with, and I think that it's a very positive thing that we're becoming more accepting of it. I've heard that when it comes to anxiety specifically in shidduchim, it almost makes no difference whatsoever. That to me is definitely a step in the right direction.
Absolutely. And thank you. There are so many more organizations since I started MASC over the last several years that came, and is available for people to call. So, yeah, we definitely turned the corner. And in New York City, Thrive New York City, the mayor and first lady, she started the organization Thrive New York City. So it's not only in the religious community, in New York City in general. So many people are reaching out for help. And thank you for all the work that you do. And just a moment, if we can just mention again your book that you wrote, The Handbook of Torah Mental Health. You want to just make that connection. Is religion a positive or a negative factor when it comes to anxiety?
Yeah, briefly on that, we see that religion can be both positive and negative when it comes to anxiety. the whole, when people are engaging in religious practice, it doesn't necessarily make it better or worse. But when people have faith, when people really have emunah or bitachon, they believe and they trust, we have some pretty solid data that that can help people. And I think in some ways it speaks to the exposure therapy piece. When a person puts themselves out and they face their fears, that gives them an opportunity to truly rely on God, to truly dig deep and rely on their faith as opposed to the material aspect of life that we see day to day.
Dr. Rosemarie, we're running out of time. I have one last question that I'd really like to get in there. What would you say to someone that's listening, that's suffering with anxiety, depression? What do you say to them to give them chizuk to go out and make a change and get help, reach out for help when they don't want help?
Face your fears. That's what I have to say. Face your fears. That's the number one thing you can do.
Okay. Well, thank you for being on, Dr. Rosemarie. Hope to have you on again. And we will have
thank
a
you.
Show with Rabbi Heimoff to talk about your wonderful book that's available in the sperm stores. Anyone can pick one up. Is it on Amazon as well?
Working on it. I think it is on Amazon, actually. Yeah, I think it is on Amazon.
Okay.
I saw it last. Yeah, I saw it recently.
Okay. And anyone that wants to reach Dr. Rosemarie, you can feel free to give Mask a call, and we'll make sure that we will connect you. Our number is 718-758-0400. Thank you for being on our show tonight.
Thanks for having me. Have a good night.
And I want to wish everybody a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos, and let's always remember, hang in, hold on, and hug tight. Thank you, and have a good night.
Are you a small business owner looking to expand your business, or perhaps looking to buy a business? Are you having trouble getting a bank loan and don't want to pay high interest rates? Then let SBA Loan Group help you buy a business for as little as 10% down utilizing an SBA program. SBA loans are small business loans guaranteed by the government, allowing participating lenders to offer more flexible terms and lower interest rates over a longer period of time. With over 15 years of experience, SBA Loan Group LLC is one of the largest SBA loan packagers in the United States. They specialize in assisting businesses in navigating the SBA process and help you qualify for an SBA loan. For a no-obligation consultation, call Yankee Markowitz at the SBA Loan Group at 484-SBA-LOAN. That's 484-SBA-LOAN, online at sbaloangroup.com. SBA Loan Group, helping your business grow with low-cost SBA loans.
Hi, this is Herbert Block, Executive Director of the American Zionist Movement. Today, you and all American Jews can vote for your voice in Israel and around the Jewish world. That's because from now through March 11th, you can cast your ballot online in the U.S. election for the 38th World Zionist Congress. Over 40,000 votes have already been cast. Just what is the World Zionist Congress? It's the global parliament of the Jewish people and the only institution that democratically represents all of world Jewry. The World Zionist Congress makes critical decisions about the future of Israel and the Jewish people. It decides how to spend $1 billion a year for the World Zionist Organization, the Jewish Agency for Israel, and the Keren Kayemet Leisrael Jewish National Fund. Those institutions support thousands of programs in Israel and in Jewish communities worldwide. In other words, by voting in this election, you can help shape life in Israel and for the global Jewish community. So visit www.zionistelection.org to vote now for the Jewish future. Thank you.
Did you ever consider being on the radio or hosting your own radio show? Now TalkLine is giving you the opportunity to produce your own daily or weekly radio program. Primetime airtime is available at very affordable and competitive rates. We're looking for independently produced or organizational programs of interest to the Jewish community in the areas of Judaica or Jewish interest, music, news, talk, legal, medical, or financial. Introductory charter rates are also available for advertisers. For more information, contact the TalkLine Broadcasting Corporation at 212-769-1925. Again, that number, 212-769-1925.